And as I was looking at the lectionary text for this week, the first thing that leaped to my mind was a Beatles song. Realizing that the Beatles occasionally got things right. They mostly got it wrong, but they occasionally got things right. And as I was looking at our lectionary text, particularly our 1 Corinthians reading, one of the most familiar texts in the Bible, I suspect, the thing that came to mind was a Beatles song, and I realized that in a very real sense, love is all we need. But we need to know what we're talking about when we say love is all we need. Warm, fuzzy feelings are not exactly what we're talking about here. And I think it's helpful for us to remember again a bit of the context in this chapter in Corinthians. It is so familiar to us. We hear it at weddings. We also hear it at funerals. We hear it as a standalone chapter frequently, and that makes sense. It's poetic. It has a wonderful message in and of itself. But if we're not careful, it will take on this sense of being something that has no context. It's just there. And there's nothing wrong with looking at the words just by themselves, but when we think of where they fit, it changes some of the things that we might think about what this passage says and expands them. It doesn't take away any of those warm feelings that you have about this wonderful chapter. But let's not forget that this comes in a letter that was written to people just like us, people in a church. They had a different set of problems than we have, but as long as we continue to allow people like me into churches, we're always going to have problems in churches, because that's just part of being human. And Paul is writing to the church in Corinth, a church that had lots of flashy gifting going on, that had lots of very competent church people in it, but still was having some struggles. And this chapter comes right after Paul has been talking about spiritual gifts. We talked about that last week, how important it is that we pay attention to the fact that we have spiritual gifts and that we celebrate all of them. That every spiritual gift is of critical importance to the health of the church. But if we stop right there, if 1 Corinthians ended at chapter 12, we'd run a really significant problem that Paul wanted to address, where we think that spiritual gifts, that abilities, that talents are sufficient. Paul says, if I speak in the tongues of people and of angels but have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. That one always caught my ear when I was younger. I thought, clanging cymbals, what would that be like? And wouldn't that be convenient if when you were talking in ways you shouldn't, that your voice was just changed into a clanging cymbal so even you would know you were being ridiculous instead of just the people you're listening to? But when we think about that, and when we think of sort of the larger picture about what Paul is addressing here, we tend to sort of skip over the part, if I speak with the tongue of, and that, and get right to the, but if I have love, I have nothing. Well, what's he talking about? Well, what we might think, or what we can, I think, put on that, speaking the tongues of people and of angels, it's not just having a facility with languages, although that's very helpful. I think one of the things we can look at is saying, if I'm somebody who can make a difference in how I speak, and I can affect people, and I can change the way they think, and I can motivate them, if I can have those abilities that make a good politician, either in the political realm or just in this realm, then that's pretty important. Then he goes on to say, if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, I have a faith that can move mountains. Well, if that first one we could interpret as having political power, if you will, this is very much having religious power. Because Paul's not talking about, I think this or I imagine I can. He's saying, if I can do this, if I have the gift of prophecy, if I have the ability to be faithful on behalf of other people, that's an extraordinary thing, and the church needs them, and it's a kind of power, and there's nothing wrong with power per se. And then he goes on to say, if I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, it's kind of an ethical and moral power, if you will. The kind of thing that people see. This is someone who's willing to die for what they believe. These are important things. These aren't just made up stuff that Paul sort of threw in there as an intro to talk about how important love is. He's saying, look, there are things out there, the ability to move people, the ability to interpret scripture and to discern the direction a congregation should go, the ability to take and articulate a moral and an ethical stand so other people understand how they should behave. These are all very important things, and they're wonderful things, and they're gifts to the church. But you know what? If you don't love people, they're worthless. Think about that for a second. We get caught up in the move into love, and we think of this passage very much in the sense of loving each other, and that's part of what it is, of course. And that's why we hear it at weddings, to remind people that on their happiest day, that not every day is going to be as happy as this, but they have to love each other anyway. But when we expand it and we look, and Paul is saying, look, you may have all of those spiritual gifts I was just talking about in chapter 12. And you may be able to do things that nobody else can do. And you can do them. We're not talking about people who have this imaginary sense of their own value. These are people who can actually accomplish these things. And he says, you know what? Those accomplishments are worthless if you don't love people. If the primary motivator behind your ability, your talents, and your spiritual gifts isn't love, it's not what's needed. And that's really hard for gifted and talented people. We talk often about how people don't know you or won't listen to you until they know you care. And it's a cliche, but like every cliche, it has truth in it. Cliches are truths that are just, we've heard them so often, we forget what the truth is. This is one that Paul's addressing. Paul is telling us that all of the talents that we have, that all of the abilities that we have, and we have them, have to be grounded in love. Because if they're not, they're just noise. Now the thing is, of course, that because we don't have the magic of noise that just appears when we suddenly are speaking just out of our experience, but not out of love, it's sometimes hard to tell. And I'm sure all of us, at least at some point, have encountered someone who is charismatic, who is encouraging and energizing and all of those things that moves us in particular directions, and we are genuinely moved because they have these abilities, they have these talents. But after a period of time, we realize that they're not doing this for us or for anybody else for that matter. They're doing it for them. That this is not an outgrowth of the love they have for us or for a task that needs to be accomplished. We're not exactly sure what it is, but we know it's not that. And where originally we heard them as being encouraging and challenging and dynamic, we now hear them as being glib and slick. And pretty soon we don't really listen to them at all, and they may as well just bang a gong at us. Love is what makes what we do matter. I can get my kids to do what I want them to because I'm bigger than them. Probably won't last forever, even with, you know, girls and such. But, you know, I can do that. I can do, you know, with Eli, with my grandson. I can make him do what I want him to do. Like the little dog that David was telling us about, is that going to last? No, it doesn't. When you make people do things, they do them as long as you're around. If I tell my children what I want them to do, and they're pretty sure this is for my own convenience, they're going to do it when they feel like it, and maybe not. When I tell my children, these are these things that are really important, and I made mistakes in this direction, and I don't want you to do this because I love you, it's completely different. My twins are 19. They haven't reached that age when you suddenly realize that your parents actually knew a lot more than you thought. Pretty much all of us reach that age. There's that time when your parents are everything, and then they're not too much at all, and then they grow back into, maybe not everything, but into a really significant source of value in your life. They're not quite there yet, but there are already glimmers of that. My children graduated high school, and they never started smoking. Doesn't sound like much of a goal, but I still haven't graduated from high school. I've done some other things, so I don't know that I really need that anymore. And I had to quit smoking, which was not fun. When I told my kids I wanted them to finish high school, I didn't threaten them. I didn't say, finish high school or you're in trouble. When I talked to them about smoking, and I started talking to my kids about smoking long before they could talk, because I figured, I don't want this to happen. It's a terrible thing. It was because I loved them. And that's what I told them over and over again. I said, yes, I am okay. I went to college, I got a graduate degree, but not finishing high school didn't make anything easier, and it made a lot of stuff a lot harder. And I don't want you to do that. And they hated high school. Human beings, usually happens, high school is not the best time of their lives. They stuck it out, not because I was so compelling in my argumentation, not because I was bigger than them and threatened them. They listened because I loved them. When I do the things that I would prefer not to do, and like all of us, I do this frequently, when I let people in who are driving like idiots rather than cutting them off and teaching them a good lesson, or whatever we think we're doing when we do that kind of thing, when I give money to strangers just because they ask for it, I do it because I have been loved and I want to love others. Because the point that Paul is making here is all against the backdrop of us being profoundly loved by God. Paul isn't saying, I want you to love as if you can invent the picture of love. Paul is talking to people who understand that Jesus came to earth and became a human being just like us, not because he was compelled to, not because there was any force anywhere that could make him, not because we convinced him, because he loved us. Paul talks about love often. We sometimes forget that, especially if we've just been reading Galatians. Paul loved people. And he loved them because he had been profoundly loved by God. And that love had been demonstrated to the ultimate degree with Jesus coming to earth as a baby, growing up, going through the same things we go through, dying on a cross, coming back to life for us because he loved us. Do we want to have an impact in the world? Yes, we do. Do we want to have some kind of a global impact? Well, that would be nice, but I think most of us have reached that stage of life where that probably won't happen, although, you know, who knows? Lots of people's second careers have been profoundly affecting. But we want to make a difference in the world we're in. We want to change the people around us and make them better. Not because they'll then say you're a wonderful person, but because we love them. We don't do this perfectly, of course. And I don't have any sense that this congregation is struggling with this, so this is one of those messages that says, oh, these people really need to hear this. What you need to hear is that you do this already, and this is why. Because Jesus loves you. He loved you enough to come live here, die, but rise again. And we want to have as much of an effect on the people that we can around us. We want to make the best use of our spiritual gifts because we all have them. We want to make the best use of the talents and the experience that we have. But we need to do it because we love people. And we do love people. I know we do. I talk to you. I know you people. Oh, sometimes someone drives you crazy and you're a little frustrated. That's part of being human, too. But we love people We want to make a permanent change in their lives that makes them even more into the people they were created to be, because we love them. And Paul is saying this is how it works. This is a great passage to read at a wedding. A great passage to read in memorial at a funeral. It's a great passage to read in any day that ends in a Y. Because it reminds us of what we do. It reminds us of the value of the gifts we have and how effective they can be when we do them because we love people. Paul ends with, and now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. We sometimes, well, I've talked often about how hard it is for us to not be these two valued people making false dichotomies everywhere. He's not saying that faith, hope, or love. He's saying these are all here. He's saying that we have faith, we have hope, we have love. But of these three that we all have, the greatest and most important one is love. With love, you can get more faith. With love, you can have more hope. With love, you can make more of a difference. Because without love, there's nothing. Clanging gongs, gaining nothing. What a terrible thought that we might do what we're trying to do from the best possible motives, maybe. But if that motive doesn't include love, we're just wasting our time. I don't know anybody who likes wasting time. I know lots of people like being idle. I know lots of people like doing nothing. There's nothing wrong with that now and then. I don't know anybody who likes to waste time. When we do what we do, when we exercise the gifts that we all have, we care about the people around us because we love them. Everything we do has value. Everything will make a difference. We may not see it in our lifetimes, but it's still there. Love is all we need. And not the love in a pop song, enjoyable as pop songs can be. Not just the love of infatuation that we see in weddings and sometimes even feel even now. It's one of the great things about being married for a long time. It's going to be 25, well, not long in this crowd, but it's going to be 25 years for Heather and I this year. And you know, there are still times when my heart gives that little jump. But the love we have is so much more than that. It is so much more than that. And the love that we're called to, the love that Paul talks about, is so much more than that too. And it's the love that makes everything we do have eternal significance. Because we do it because we have been loved first. God so loved the world that he gave his Son. And his Son so loved us that it's changed us forever. Amen.